Well, friends, welcome to Chapter 60. Attention is all you need. They had left Saskia's house in search of a bagel, and because of the space was still charged with Vasily's spectre. Look, Saskia tried reasoning. My past is my past. I can't change that. Maybe you can change it, Mitz interrupted. There's no point being jealous of my history. I'm not jealous of your history. I'm jealous of the way you mind-melded with him. Saskia sighed. He's the data your mind was trained on. That made Saskia smile. Mitza throwing her jargon back at her. She couldn't help it. So update my biases.
What?
Mitza tilted her head. Saskia explained that the transformer architecture that underpinned the modern chatbots wasn't a static model. It famously pays attention. With her fingers, Saskia air-quoted the title of the famous 2017 paper that had kicked everything off. Attention is all you need. Attention? But they had arrived at the bagel shop, and Saskia gestured inside. Let's order our zeros. Why would you call a bagel a zero? Saskia squinted at Mitza, confused. Mitza shook her head. You just called the bagel zeros. Zero is awesome, Saskia laughed. It's an affectionate term. You're just taking the concept for granted. Mitza bristled, but rather than elaborate, Saskia had the good sense to steer them both inside her favourite sandwich store. Mitza's mood improved with their food, and it inclined her to make a peace offering. So, tell me about attention. Saskia explained that attention was meant both as a long-term and a contextual application of the model's understanding of words. Words could be imbued with specific meanings depending on updated circumstances of the user's question. It can account for frame of reference, like donut. Saskia held up her bagel. You're holding a bagel, Saskia grinned, but you'd call the shape a donut. A mathematician would call it a torus. A donut is something filled with custard that you eat. So in the word Tevec embedding space, donut could shade either way. Context would determine if it referred to the shape or a fried dough delight. Attention determines which. Mitza pursed her lips and squinted at Saskia. The transformer moves the embedding vector representing donut around the embedding space. It uses a sequence of linear transformations determined by the words in your query. Mitza's eyes popped wide open and her mouth followed suit. Wait, how does the embedding space work? Are the words like pieces of string, like knots? Or are they stretched and folded sheets of paper? Saskia rubbed her furrowed brow before suddenly dropping her hand and meeting Mitza's eyes. No, each word is a single point. It's not like the more topologically intriguing manifolds Vasily was talking about back at your place. And the embedding space, rather than being two or three or even four-dimensional, has like 10,000 dimensions. We're looking at points in a super high-dimensional space. Mitza frowned again. There's still a bunch of interesting geometry going on, though, Saskia enthused. Like, if you look at the difference between the king and queen vectors, the direction and length the point king is embedded at and the point queen is embedded at, then that's pretty similar to the difference between, say, uncle and aunt or brother and sister. So, the difference vectors somehow encode switching gender. Mitza's frown was turning into a scowl, and Saskia could see she was not merely losing her, but frustrating her too. Pulling the metaphorical ripcord, she switched subjects. You said that something Vasily said gave you an idea. You ready to tell me about it? Mitza's eyes brightened. Saskia reached out and adjusted a lock of Mitza's hair. You see, I pay attention too. The corner of Mitza's mouth lifted. I think there might be a way for you to fix the DBG rig in the Gulf. I'm not sure I've got it in me to try going back that far again, Saskia responded cautiously. Mitza waved her hands in front of her. It's not that. It just requires slowing time down, employing your super strength. Well, friends, that was chapter 60. I hope you enjoyed it. For the commentary today, rather than connect my musings to the chapter we just heard, I wanted to give a topical shout-out. March 14th is Pi Day, it being 14 days into the third month. 3.14. Though it might not have crossed your radar in the past, the idea of Pi Day has been slowly building steam over the last few years. I suspect you're more likely to have heard about it if you have kids. In any event, those celebrating typically highlight some fun fact about Pi. For those paying attention, I obviously glossed over this shout-out last year, but now that we've made a full circle, in the sense that I've been at this podcast for over a year, I'd feel remiss to ignore it a second time. So, let me convince you that Pi is a really natural number. As I suspect most of you know, Pi is the ratio of the circumference of a circle to its diameter, no matter how big or small your circle is, or where you find it. Most people, when they first hear this, are surprised that the ratio of the circumference to the diameter of any circle is the same, regardless of its size or whereabouts. If I cast my own mind back, I'm pretty sure I was one of most people. Anyway, I thought it might be fun to give a quick intuition for why this must be the case. To start, imagine a circle. Now, imagine the smallest possible square surrounding it. Let's call the width of that square 1 unit. Hopefully you can see that that implies that our inscribed circle must also have diameter 1 unit. Now, suppose I want an upper bound for how far it is to go around our circle. Well, clearly circumnavigating the circle is shorter than going all the way around the square, since going around the circle is simply cutting each corner of the square. But the square, of course, is 4 units around. Thus, since we can always put a smaller square around any circle, it must be true that for any circle, circumnavigating it is less than 4 times the distance across it. Alternatively, we could inscribe the biggest square inside our circle. This time, the diagonal of that square would be the same 1 unit across the circle, making the side lengths of our square 1/2. That's a little Pythagoras there. And now, since going around the circle means a longer path than circumnavigating the square, we get a lower bound of 2 × √2, the sum of the 4 sides of the inscribed square, for the distance around any circle. Thus, any circle must be between 2.82 and 4 times the distance across it. Perhaps you see the trick we can now apply. Instead of a square, put a pentagon or a hexagon or an octagon inside and outside your circle. The geometry is a bit trickier, but the same ideas apply. The clever thing is that we could now do the same trick for higher and higher sided polygons, and the gap between our upper and lower bounds clearly gets tighter and tighter. In fact, the lower bound for a 20-sided polygon would be about 3.13. For a 100-sided polygon, 3.14, which I suspect means that at a glance, a 100-sided polygon looks more or less identical to a circle. Pi is simply the limit of these two converging bounds. And, as we've just seen, it doesn't depend on where our circle lives. Until next week, be kind to someone and keep an eye out for the ripples of joy you've seeded. Cheerio!